States, the election of Barack Obama had certain effects, etc. The one other category that probably doesn't fit that, but is somewhat different, is Israel-Palestine, which was actually included to a large extent to emphasize a different point, which is the kind of diversity of opinions. So you will find quite contrasting opinions under that from quite different perspectives. So you have a kind of hardcore anti-Deutsch, pro-Israel article. You have a kind of softcore anti-Deutsch response to a kind of hardcore anti-Deutsch. You have a piece which was a discussion between two people, one about one state versus two state. The two state, interestingly, the two state person was Arab and the one state person was Jewish. I was the moderator of that. There is a piece supposedly published by an anonymous Platypus Historians group that I actually wrote. And there is also a discussion, a panel in which it was between I and a representative of the American RCP, which is a main Maoist group in the United States, which took place in New York City. I think those are the contributions, right?
Yeah.
There's actually an article, a recent article, which was an interview with Moshe Makover on in a recent
AG.
Which I and Tom Willis did. And so anyway, like, without discussing the politics of the individual articles with the different positions of different people, one of the problems that we have tended to have with the view is if we publish an article, people think, oh, that's your position on the subject, right? And part of like this curation here is designed to show this is not intended as a Platypus position. It's intended as giving people a kind of constellation of positions. I mean, I guess there were in the original view of Platypus, we published a few anonymous articles under the rubric of the Platypus Historians group.
But we decided to stop.
We decided to stop doing that, and I think that was problematic. For example, there was an article on Trotskyism, right? It was published anonymously, and people assumed that I wrote it, right? Because they think like, oh, well, I'm the Trotsky guy. And I actually didn't write it. Someone named Marco Torres wrote it. And I actually disagreed with... But
fundamentally, that's the reason why we didn't
write it. I'm saying like that's an example of why we decided no anonymous articles. The other thing I just want to say about it is there are a lot of articles by Chris Cutrone.
I'll get there, yeah.
Okay. In general, they're developed an attitude that we wanted to encourage outside contributions and not have our own members write articles. There's, of course, no taboo on members writing articles. There have been a lot of articles written by members. But the idea is we're trying to provide a space for others on the left, not just put out our own positions.
Yeah, so this point is to highlight that the Platypus Review is not a party organ kind of paper. It is not either a coterie publication specifically designed to publish people in our milieu who share somehow our ideas. Quite the opposite, the approach is to solicit and publish wide-ranging positions on the left, even those that are highly contestable of whether or not they're leftist positions. There's four genres, significant genres that we publish in the PR. So we have edited transcripts of our public forums to specifically highlight and create a historical record of the events that we've organized. There's articles by different members of the left intentionally to sort of bring in that conversation into the PR. Then there's interviews, mostly led by Platypus members, but conducted with figures of the left, largely with members and participants of the New Left, but although that also has expanded to other avenues, and then the Platypus members' articles. So Just to say a few things about, more details about this, the first issue of the Platypus Review was in November 2007, so the publication is 8 years old this month. That year was the year that we hosted our first public fora, which are in the table of contents. So we did imperialism, what is it, why should we be against it, and this is in the second section on the anti-war movement. And also the three R's, reform, revolution, and resistance. So these first public fora really represent from the beginning, and their presence in the PR showed the extent to which we were developing this idea of hosting the conversation on the left. A lot of the questions and things that we worked through in developing those panels became the standard of how we would continue developing our public fora. And so they embodied a very early moment of the organization, very early, but these were published much later in the Platypus Review. But they do embody early history of the organization, and that's very important. Another transcript, which is the only one in this book of a public forum, is the first one, is The Decline of the Left in the 20th Century. Towards a Theory of Historical Regression. This panel included Richard and many other members of Platypus. And it's the only panel that we have included here that's a Platypus-only panel. And it is an exception to the rule as well. But it did sort of really embody the ideas that we were trying to work through in the immediate aftermath of the beginning of the collapse or disintegration of the anti-war movement as well. But it was our reflection on Marxism in the 20th century. The other are interviews. And like I said, there's interviews here. Spencer's organized with members of the New Left. We have Mark Rudd. We have Max Obom. And we have Sunni doing an interview with Juliet Mitchell.
Just briefly interrupt. So Platypus unofficially had its own radio program in that there was University of Chicago radio program that was run by Spencer Lanham, who edited this book, and that created a lot of possibilities for interviewing Lanham.
Yeah. And that's something that I feel that also we've continued doing over the last few years, but different members of Platypus have picked up the task of doing the interviews, and it has become a way to sort of engaging the existing left in sort of a more focused way. There's articles by the different members of the left, and again, to insist, it is an open submission publication. We have never rejected an article on ideological grounds. We publish these people as authors. We let them maintain the form of their own writing. Basically, the editorial process is simply to clarify and to extend and to elaborate on positions that they've taken, particularly positions that they might take for granted, so we can flesh out why these positions were taken. But their ideas are their own, and we don't intervene with that. We simply try to make those things clear to our readers. And Platypus articles, then, this is the Chris Catrone and perhaps the Platypus Historians group early, really represented were an embodiment of how Platypus is a pedagogical project. In one way, we understand that most Platypus members' contributions are a way of engaging and elaborating on our own reading group. And so these articles have a historical approach, looking at the history of the left and expanding on the topics that we have covered in the reading group. And so that's the principal role that Platypus members writing in the PR have, bringing that pedagogy outward or even expanding, going into deeper issues raised by our own reading group. So how does the PR relate to the Platypus project? Platypus is not an organization that puts forward a political program or perspectives, political positions, basically, or a political program, but we do have historical perspectives. What the only position that we do take is the left is dead, long live the left, or the only slogan, not really position, that we take. And this slogan is really embodied in the whole raison d'etre of the project. Platypus believes that the present is conditioned by... sorry, I got lost my train of thought. there's an epochal condition that makes a present that is really bound up with an unprecedented obfuscation of the history of the left, and since the rise of the modern revolutions. And so we understand that the present is fundamentally conditioned by the defeats of the left, and in a way that it's obscured to the present. And yes, previous historical, or the previous and the older left, especially 100 years ago, 150 years ago, they recognized their politics on the grounds of defeats. But they were in a context where they anticipated a resurgence and renewal of a revolutionary project. For example, the defeats of 1848 were opportunities to learn critical lessons, specifically demonstrating to Marx, for example, that the necessity of the dictatorship of authoritariat. The Marxists of the Second International, Lenin, Luxembourg, Trotsky, they understood the moment, building upon the lessons learned from 1789, 1848, and even 1871. What we recognize in Badapest today, what we call this condition of the death of the left, is that we can no longer understand the defeats of the left that preceded us. And there's this particularly is in regards to the new left. After the defeats of the Bolshevik Revolution, even after, especially after World War II, we face a condition in which the past itself becomes our greatest obstacle. In Platypus, we believe that the present is conditioned by a profound crisis of historical consciousness, of an unprecedented nature, that the present is not only a period of extended defeats or a mere downturn of the left, but the present is qualitatively distinct from anything the past generations, at least since the 1960s, faced. We believe that this is most fundamentally conditioned by the question of Stalinism, and which was a fundamental question for the new left, and that the failure to recognize, to confront, to address the failures of the old left, the either rejection of the old left that the new left embodied or the inability of the new left to work through the problems of the old left, is really what conditions this yawning abyss between our present moment and other historical moments on the left. The new left understood itself as a communist project that needed to supersede the project of the October Revolution, and understood itself as a new form of revolutionary Marxism. But our view is that the new left failed to carry out global revolution in a way that is not instructive to the present. We cannot learn from it in the way that the Second International learned from 1789, 1848, or 1871, like I said. Instead, their failure obscures our understanding of the present. The moment the Platypus emerged with the anti-war movement really was a confrontation with the way in which the new left was repeating itself. I mentioned yesterday I was part of a group who joined the new SDS, and we experienced the way in which these old problems were being repeated, and they were being even repeated with a lot less awareness of itself as problems that the 60s.
Even the name was a repetition.
Yeah, even the name was a repetition. Meaning a panel, unfortunately, that we never were able to produced because of problems that I can only even, we wanted to do 40 years of 1968 to embody the sense that what we are experiencing is a repetition of the 1960s new left. And this repetition.
Was the one where Mark Rudd came totally drunk?
I wasn't there for that, but yeah, that's true. Yeah, okay. That might not be good to be on the record, but yes. So with this inability of the new left to stop repeating, like the new left just being the condition in which the left is repeating those problems, has created deep historical confusion and regression. So our project is intended to recover the history of the left and to begin to understand the present as constituted in and through the failure of past attempts of self-emancipation. So in order to do this, we host a conversation on the left. And we most clearly do this with our public fora, but also through the Platypus Review. That really is all that I'll say for now.
Yes. Well, that's a good summary of Platypus and its history. And I was just going to say something about, though, the concept of the Platypus Review. So before Platypus officially started, and Platypus was basically students of Chris Scutrone and a few people like me who were friends of his or people. There was an earlier attempt or an earlier thought about platypus, and which was actually quite different. And the idea was for some kind of journal project. It never got off the ground. So it was with me and Spencer and Sunny Danetia.
And Stephanie.
And Stephanie, yeah, Stephanie. And I think like this journal conception of like a periodical. So we never aimed to be a party newspaper, right? We were never a party. I think that our models, to some extent, we had two models in mind, neither of which really fit. One was the Partisan Review in the 1930s, and the other was the New Left Review of the early 60s. Are people in this room kind of familiar with those periodicals? More or less? Okay, so I'll just briefly describe them. So Partisan Review, both are English language periodicals that had a lot of intellectual influence. So Partisan Review was, in fact it still exists, but it totally changed its politics. But in the 1930s, there was a group of basically New York intellectuals who were critical of Stalinism, the Stalinized, sympathetic to Marxism, sympathetic to modernism and high modernism and culture. And
they published Trotsky and Clement Greenberg.
Right. Yeah, and were sympathetic to Trotsky, but more in the kind of fellow traveler way. They weren't sort of the official Trotskyists. And so to some extent, they were the closest one would find in the U.S. to something like the Frankfurt School. Very different, and they had a lot of influence. And afterward, they became more conservative, but they still had a huge amount of influence, and maybe more influence at that point. But the New Left Review was a British publication, and it came out of the crisis in the British communist milieu after 1956, people moving away from and rebelling against Stalinism, and it called itself the New Left Review. So it's like the beginning of a kind of intellectual journal of the New Left. It's also still in existence. It's gone through various political mutations.
There are several readings in the reading group that are actually on the New 60s and the 1960s that are coming out directly from the New Left reader, Julia Mitchell.
Right, okay. So that's another point. Now, so the original reading group that was started, like, I found in a used bookshop in Chicago a copy of a paperback copy of a book called The New Left Reader. And it was a book published in 1969, I think, which was a collection of articles describing this phenomenon of the 60s of the New Left, right? There's this new generation of radicals. We want to explain how these people are thinking. And it was actually a very good anthology. So it had everybody from Leszek Kolakowski to Mark Rudd and so forth. And it was very symptomatic, right? It was both like the perfect anthology because it shows both the character of the New Left and also, you know, 40 years later, it showed very strongly what was wrong with the New Left, if you had a critical sensibility. And that kind of became a basis for a reading group, which later then became progressively modified. So the original way for people, most of the people in Platypus, to start understanding the historical problems was through thinking about the New Left, right? And these are people, obviously, you know, of a completely different generation. And I think there was, to some extent, at the beginning of Platypus, a feeling among many of the people, a sense like Platypus is going to be some kind of new left, right? The New Left thought of itself as correcting the errors of the old left, and you could have some new left that would think about these issues in some different way.
For example, I remember being shocked when I first read Castro in this book and just coming to the realization that there's nothing, not a specter of Marxism and Castro, that anti-imperialist politics embodied an absolute anti-American politics. And that was one of the sort of very useful shocks of just reading Castro firsthand and experiencing a huge sort of lack of any, saying Marxist-Leninism, but without having any other context of which to be said, this is Marxist.
Right. So to a large extent, the reading group syllabus evolved over time, and bit by bit, things were replaced, and it's a much deeper and richer syllabus. I think the only thing left from the original is the Kolakowski.
Kolakowski, yeah.
But anyway...
Fanon, do you still read the Fanon sometimes? Maybe only a periphery.
Or it's a different Fanon. I think it's a different... But anyway, the other... So one of the questions that sort of developed through practice was the question of, like, what kind of a journal we could be. And one of the things that also started very early on, which actually surprised me, and at first I wasn't clear on why this was a good thing, is we started publishing transcripts of Fora. And so many of many of the texts are actually texts of conversations, right? Again, it's not just different articles from different points of view, but it's actually reports of conversations in which people disagree or are interacting with each other. So it's somewhat of a different conception of what a leftist journal should be. And the question of tone is also an issue, because we have articles with sort of many different registers, right? I mean, this is mostly given out free. You can read every article in this book on the internet and every article that's ever been published in the Platypus Review. So the idea is that it should appeal to in some respects, a general leftist public, but obviously it's at a different level from your average, socialist newspaper handed out at the factory gates.
It's something that Pam raised, and the first editor-in-chief of the Platypus Review reminded me recently. It's sort of like when the PR was founded, and I wasn't part of the original board, but I was obviously around roommates with the first editor. We were really having a sense that when we were showing up to the anti-war protests, we were absolutely confused by the characters on the left that we were encountering. And we wanted to create a publication that would be a tool for ourselves, for us to really understand the politics of that moment, at least in its very sort of conception, that we wanted to be the review of the left. And that we would present and provide a tool on campuses for other students who were curious about the left, about the various positions and the various organizations and the various politics that were present on the left. It was intended to really introduce people to this left. Of course, it's evolved into engaging more historical issues, which that's where the effect of the reading group came into play. But it was intended to sort of really offer a presentation of the present left in the moment of its founding as a tool for students who wanted to know about the left. They could see various of different positions next to each other, activist students, anarchist, anarcho-syndicalist, to more IWW kind of worker, to an interview with Moshe Pastone, which was published in our third issue. Perhaps maybe questions?
Yeah, do you have questions? I was going to...
Yeah. Well, from where did you get this format, this folding format?
Well, Dakota was the original designer was Dakota, and really it was, what is the cheapest publication that we can publish? And that is a single broadsheet, black and white, and so conceived of a folding that we could use. We've tried to improve that over the years. I think we don't, new designers make adjustments, but we've maintained, obviously, everything within that format, because it's sort of the cheapest thing we could conceive of publishing, a single broadsheet, black and white.
That's also an example of how, things in the group changed. So Dakota was one of the original members, basically an anarchist who then left because he had disagreements because with us being too Marxist.
Because of what?
We're too Marxist for his thing.
I would say he was more concerned about the nature and formation of the organization. You know, Dakota was one of the people who organized the 3 hours panel. It was his idea. And for him, sort of the first, the anti-imperialist panel was about engaging the Marxist left that was very much present in the movement. But the 3 hours, reform, revolution, and resistance, was really intended to, for them, because they found in Platypus a context in which to engage and perhaps create a critique of resistance politics. But fundamentally, I think that the point of departure was a sense of not liking the organizational structure, not being happy with Chris's role as president, and being concerned particularly with the young ones, meaning me at that point and my generation, and how the pedagogy was influencing
brainwashing you into Marxism. Yeah.
Brainwashing you into Marxism. Yeah.
How the various phases of Platypus history are reflected in the entries of the PR?
That's a good question. I don't think it's explicit, but I think if we just look at
the section. It's kind of in the introduction, but Spencer.
Yes, that's true. So first, phase one is the anti-war movement, which is represented in that. The phase two is really represented on the panel, the decline of the left. So the second phase in Platypus, which this might be obscure to non-Platypus members, we have this sort of 4 to 5 phase serialization of our own historical development, which is bound up with changes on the left. Phase one is the anti-war movement and the decline of the anti-war movement. Phase two is a sort of revival of Marxism, and the context around the crisis, the financial crisis of 2008, where we organized a lot of events that really focused on, it was like, we have the Lenin stuff, sort of Lenin's Marxism, Rosa Luxemburg's Marxism, Trotsky's Marxism, where we really went sort of into hardcore pedagogy about the history of Marxism. And that is basically the largest section. And phase three is Occupy. Which is also an entire section, sort of what happened with Occupy took, especially the left that we were engaging in phase one and phase two, really sort of disappeared from the scene when Occupy happened, at least from my experience in New York City. So we attempted to bring Occupy, our role, our organizational role at that moment was to bring the conversation about Occupy, different participants and the different committees that constituted Occupy, which had very different politics, onto campus. Because Occupy had broken out, even though the whole Occupy movement was occupation, there's a question of repetition of the new left. What we were experiencing were occupation of campuses. There was a wave of these. And this then culminated in the Occupy of Wall Street. And so we brought that conversation back into campus. We thought that the best thing was to create a context in which these conversations could happen on campus in front of students that might or might not be interested in Occupy or part of it. And the truth is that the last stage, the fourth stage, which is the aftermath and of the Occupy movement, which we characterize as in receding, even further receding as this further sense of the decay of the left, is our fourth phase, which is, well, it's also the aftermath of Obama election. So I guess I missed the Obama election of 2008 also characterized this third stage.
I think the stages are somewhat American-centered in their analysis.
It's true.
And I would say they're also somewhat Platypus-centered. In other words, it's not meant necessarily as a kind of objective analysis of everything that's happening globally. It's also about like the way Platypus engaged with things. So Platypus doesn't, you know, per se try to direct. And again, it's not a party. We don't direct members into things. But a lot of people who were in Platypus were in the New Students for a Democratic Society, which came out of the anti-war movement. A lot of people engaged with Occupy. Occupy was a possibility, which is rare in an American context, or even a European, you know, where you could attend meetings that were mass meetings of people who are in some vague, often crazy way politicized.
Yeah,
you still had these huge demos in New York City and these mass meetings and parks occupied. And
it's also a way to just internally understand also stages of recruitment, the kind of politics that were predominant at the time that we were recruiting certain people. And so certain issues that come about internal debate are grounded on these stages of recruitment and the kind of politics and thinking that might have influenced people when they joined Platypus. It's very different to have joined Platypus at the beginning, during the anti-war movement, to have joined Platypus during a sense of disappointment with Obama.
I also say one thing about Occupy to some extent in terms of Platypus's own political estimation. We made a mistake. We misunderestimated, to quote George Bush. So we actually, I think, expected Occupy to last longer than it did.
Even though we were probably the only ones saying that it was going to be short-lived.
Yeah, so we were the most pessimistic people on the left about Occupy, and we were insufficiently pessimistic. I actually was on a panel, a Platypus panel, and people were talking about Occupy as the coming revolution, and I was like, look, obviously, you know, a bunch of people camped in downtown Manhattan are not going to shut down global capitalism. And this is, you know, the question is like, what do you do after Occupy fails? And people looked at me like I was crazy, and like a month later, it was all over. And I thought it would go on for maybe 6 months or a year or something.
I do want to say something about the curating and these sections. These sections, what we want, if you don't read the book through in one reading, we do encourage people to read the sections together, because it's the only opportunity to actually see how the Platypus Review has over time developed certain engagements. One of my sort of, the section on the economic crisis, I find it to be really fruitful, because there's three or four articles that are literally within months of each other responding and building up on a conversation. We begin with James Hartfield, Living Marxism, and David Harvey on the why the U.S. stimulus package is bound to fail. And those are very specific expressions of the 2008-2009 moment and how there was a discussion within Platypus. We have three Platypus-authored articles that followed the David Harvey. There's Chris Cutrone, there's Ian Morrison, and then there's Teo's article in response to the Greek crisis. And which culminated then, sort of, this is an example of how the Platypus Review was able to lead the rest of the organization in a discussion, because then the organization organized the panels on radical interpretations of the present crisis, which we had in New York with David Graeber, Saul Newman. No, that's actually London. We had London with David Graeber, Saul Newman, Hillel Ticton, and James Woodhuizen, which is really an excellent panel. And there's online, there's the New York version that we published as well, and which culminated then years later, which is the last piece, the most recent piece in the PR Reader, is the Politics of Work panel. And so us trying to develop a conversation that began in the Platypus Review, and then we hosted in a curated panel. And then we brought it back. And that's the section where you really see the evolution of issues that are being raised, and how there are political shifts that are affecting the thinking about the economic crisis.
Go ahead.
How does Occupy relate to this Battle of Seattle phases?
Well, Battle of Seattle was long before Platypus. So
it looked kind of similar.
We experienced
it peaked in the killing of one anarchist in Italy, and then came 9/11, and it was all
okay. So
yeah, 9/11 killed the anti-globalization movement.
Yeah, but it was the anti-globalization movement.
I mean, not me, but the vast majority of people in Platypus were too young to be politicized by 1999, so they didn't experience that moment. It was very different in terms of general consciousness. So people like me were kind of aware of that, but outside the left, like the Seattle stuff, didn't make a dent in American society. Occupy was much bigger in terms of the number of people. Mm-hmm. So people who are not leftists knew about Occupy.
Okay.
The you know, people, I mean, I was living in a very, with my father in a very bourgeois neighborhood, and I would, you know, hear people in the cafe, right, reading papers and talking about Occupy and from a right-wing perspective. And but also, you know, MSNBC, which is like the liberal news channel, was kind of very sympathetic to Occupy. Mm-hmm. So you had a media discussion about Occupy that was much bigger and deeper, and the a number of people involved. It wasn't just like some, I mean, the people who are kind of the core organizing it were kind of anarchists, but it influenced people who had never been, you know. Okay, go ahead, Stefan.
Concerning, for example, Occupy, I have the feeling that, especially in the Frankfurt chapter, I don't know how it's with the comrades in Vienna, for example, that the Platypus Review isn't used as much as we would like to. And the thing it functioned best for was like this collective memory which was gathered. That, for example, if you're in the reading group and you're visiting a leftist event and you stumble across something which you, and you have an idea but you don't really know how to make sense of it, it's very useful to look up what the Platypus Review wrote concerning that.
That's fantastic to hear. I have a lot to say on this and how the PR functions and supports our activity.
In Vienna, we kind of failed to use it very good. Somehow, in a certain extent, it's based on the thing that Vienna people don't like to read English.
Which we're starting a German PR, by the way.
Next year.
Next year, we're starting a German language.
Might be published in January, even.
Wonderful. But on the other hand, it's a greater one on, like, I'd say, we should spend more energy in the logistics of PR in Vienna. Like, we know the places, but we kind of fail to utilize the distribution.
So, I mean, obviously, distribution and present on campus is an immediate way in which the physical PR being dropped in a leftist or a student union cafe immediately offers the opportunity to reach an audience that otherwise we wouldn't reach online. But, you know, when we table, like here right now, and you have 20 issues laid out in front of you, it's the object that embodies us trying to host the conversation. And this is why it's important to at least be familiar with the content within, because with any single leftist that comes over to the table, you can direct him to something that we have published, and you can show that what we are publishing is not simply Platypus perspectives, but a variety of perspectives on the left, by showing just three different issues, or sometimes even a single issue, you really have the tensions between positions. I think that the issue 80 is a perfect example of really demonstrating very distinct positions that we are publishing that are very much opposed to each other. And so how to utilize the PR? It's student events, like obviously they're free to take, and they are a way of really simply talking about, like, hey, we're trying to host a conversation, and these are multiple ways that we have done that. And you could say that with the question, even from art to critical theory, to the history of Marxism, and to the influence and the significance of Lenin.
I would just say one thing, though. I mean, there are 50 articles that are numbered in here, and that was intentional. It was supposed to be 5 years. The process of putting out the reader took a bit longer than we intended. But there are two categories of articles that you mentioned. One is the appendices with the four extra articles, which are kind of not really about hosting the conversation. They're about a platypus perspective. And the other, which is a separate category by itself, are any articles by Chris Cutrone, right, which are not official positions of platypus, but which have a different valence from other articles, because they are kind of taken as somewhat representing a platypus perspective, though one is not in any way required to subscribe to them. And to some extent, what happened, and it's not a policy, is that the one person who really ended up platypus member, who ended up writing for platypus, was Chris, who was sort of the president and to some extent the sort of figure that started the group, since most of the people started originally were his students.
We have 2 minutes, really, because I am moderating the next panel, and so I'm not going to be able to have much time, but any more?
One real question.
what do you want the reader to do? What would be what you wish for the reader, for example, in the Frankfurt chapter, in the Vienna chapter, or in the Kosovo chapter? What would an impact you would like it to have?
Well, impact, it could be that more events talking about the reader will be useful. I have suggested side reading groups where you go through the sections. But I think that the introduction is absolutely crucial to Spencer's written introduction is absolutely crucial, as it embodies the reasons why these engagements were taken up and how they represent the history and development of the organization. It is a that introduction is a rarely rare opportunity to understanding the history of the Platypus Review, and through which we can also understand the organization. So at least at a minimum, the introduction is a required reading. But I do think that you have to encourage and find ways, maybe, you know, have reading group discussions where you discuss, would you read up a few articles and then come over and discuss them. It is hard now that we have 80 issues to tell recruits to go and read 80, but now you have something that you can say, here's a very clear selection of articles that will really introduce you to what we're doing as a group.
One thing that was thought of was that this book could be used the way the original New Left Reader was in some way, that you could read articles from it as part of a group and discuss them to bring up topics. So you could do like one section for each or something. And it's also been discussed, although we haven't, of like having, for example, I guess German would be the first language to do a translation of it.
A very common question. Do you like, which role plays the PR in the growth platypus? For example, like
not enough
chapters or like
not enough. It's very unfortunate.
I will, yes, it's true. It's
that our
enough.
Membership does not read it enough, including in the United States, so it's not, you have no excuse for language.
But our expansion into Germany was really made possible by us publishing the idea of publishing the IMF. I know the
IDF.
The Marxism in Israel, or
the Initiative Socialistische Forum.
Yes,
the ISF.
The ISF. Thank you. So, of course, this article created incredible amount of controversy on the American left, particularly with the anti-imperialist left. But it was strategically really an opportunity for us, Jesche, which was our single German member, and Marcus, we say, we want to expand Platypus into Europe. It was the first occasion, and it really provoked, it allowed, right, that engagement that we opened up in the PR allowed us to expand into Germany, to get the attention of the young German left, particularly the anti-Germans, which we have recruited a considerable amount from, but not because Platypus is sort of crypto anti-German or anything, but the reason that we published this was because it was understood at that moment that this was really a significant symptom on the German left, and we wanted to also highlight and basically bring that politics out of its provincialism and expose it to the world, to the international left. And we still deal with the fact that people treat this as the ultimate example of why Platypus is somehow pro-imperialist or a pro-Zionist. But in reality, it was an opportunity to start a conversation with the German left. And I strongly believe that we would have, that it was because of that article that we were able to grow in Germany.
But what's very interesting is that the anti-Deutsch don't care about us publishing it.
Yeah.
They don't see it as any kind of sympathy either. So
no, but I'm pretty sure we got their attention. I'm pretty sure we got their attention when we published that in English. And so it was a way of opening an avenue of engagement, basically. And this is the thing, like initiatives really offer an opportunity to engage with different aspects of the left. I mean, right now we have Daniel in Paris, and it would be fantastic if we had an article coming from a specific French tendency. We have yet to publish. And so that would be a way in which we can continue to engage the develop our chapter in Paris.
The French speaking left has been our weakest place in terms of
Spanish. Yeah.
Not as, even Spanish, I think we're better than.
Well, in Latin America, perhaps more than Spain. Yeah. Or well, we also don't have Italy engagements, but that's another. Those are all avenues where we want to expand.
Okay.
Did you have any other question? So I think we might do this again tomorrow. But so for all the duration of the weekend, you can get the Platypus Review Reader for 20 euros. It's normally 30 euros, and we decided to make it available. So get your copies now. We have boxes of theirs, and and if you know if there's interested in, for example, Sebastian, if you there's a bookshop that might want it, we have it. Like we're working it in a bookshop in Berlin. We literally want to put it into university campuses and university libraries. We want to put it into bookshops and sell it. At a bookshop, I think we would definitely need to put the price of 30 euros. But we can make orders and send you boxes if you're interested in getting more. And I mean, I'm always open. If you have ideas of articles that we can solicit, please write me. The email's in the back of the Platypus Review. I look forward to your contributions.
Thank you.
Okay.